Welcome to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students from the Interlochen Arts Academy. As you can guess by the music, this show has a special emphasis on graduating seniors. We'll open with the Academy Band performing an excerpt from Points of Departure by Roshan Etazadi.
Good morning! Gotta Getaway Travel Agency, how may I help you? Yes, ma'am. Our packages to Hawaii do include lodging, meals, and round-trip airfare. I'm sorry? No, ma'am, I don't think that's a good idea. Well, you see, ma'am, I don't think you can take the train from California to Hawaii. Have a nice day. And thanks for calling. I've been a travel agent for 30 years. I can say it's a really terrific career for someone like me who's outgoing and quick, someone with a knack for the politic, even when faced with a customer who's appalling. Though most of my clients are friendly and sweet, some of them, frankly, are less than a treat. Thousands and thousands of incoming calls, I send them off one and all, with have a nice day, and thanks for calling. Good morning, Gotta Getaway Travel Agency, how may I help you? Oh, sir, I'm so sorry to hear your vacation in Orlando isn't going so well. How can I help? Your hotel room doesn't have an ocean view. Orlando is 40 miles from the coast. Yes, sir, I know Florida looks narrow on the map, but it's really quite large. Have a nice day, and thanks for calling. So many callers, so many names. How are so many of these men called James? Half of them won't know their departure date. Half of them will want the bereavement rate. The other half won't know the day that they want to return. Sometimes they're not great with geography, so all the details are left up to me. A week in the city, a month by the shore, a luxury spa with inclusions galore. You know the logistics are solely my concern. Good morning, Gotta Getaway Travel Agency. How may I help you? Yes, ma'am, I'd be happy to help you with that flight. What is your destination airport? I'm sorry, which city in New York? Hippopotamus? Am I hearing you correctly? Hippopotamus? Ma'am, there's no city in New York State called Hippopotamus. Yes, I'm sure. No, I'm not calling you a liar, ma'am. And no, I'm not trying to make you angry, but Hippopotamus, is it near Albany? Ma'am, by any chance, do you mean buffalo? Yes, ma'am, these large mammals are quite close. Have a nice day, and thanks for calling. Maybe sometimes they ask for the moon and the stars, four-star hotels and luxury cars, cruise ships with round-the-clock gourmet buffets, trips to the Congo for 2 or 3 days, walking tours traipsing through Amsterdam, bicycle tours of Vietnam. Of course I can help you out with that, ma'am. I give them peace of mind. Everyone wants to get away, the fantasy of the come what may. It's human nature to want to roam, to search for adventure far from home. We all have different points of departure.
Hi there, I'm Tevin Goldberg, a member of the Interlochen Arts Academy class of 2014, and what you're about to hear is a piece I wrote for my friend Dan Blumhard, who's also a member of the class of 2014, and it's a solo cello piece entitled Alternative Currents. And he asked me to write this at the beginning of this year for his college auditions, so I tried to write a piece that symbolized our friendship as based around a conversation we had in September around Lake Green Lake, when the light was reflecting off of the water in such a way that seemed musical. So I hope you enjoy Alternative Currents.
Thank you. You're listening to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students from the Interlochen Arts Academy. Up next, a work written by creative writer Sojourner Ahebe about the Roma population living in Texas.
Hidden Americans. Every day is the day of the dead, and we sit in the family cemetery with red aluminum Coke cans spread at our brown knees, and the spiritless breathe under us as a reminder of tradition, their hollow chest heaving in and out while the earth fights the physicality of their bodies, the way it is just our culture to move. Grandmother Fifka sits on the stone bench of the grave and holds her sandwich in both hands, the mustard dripping down her fingers, a wooden picnic basket at her hip side, and she asks me in hushed Romani to hand her a napkin. This is the silence we devour. The family comes in increments. Black Hondas and bicycles arrive like slow dinner guests. We laugh about our dead and crunch on potato chips to console the silence of the deceased. And when the buried have had enough of our talk and we enough of salt and vinegar on the tongue, we leave them our soda cans, mementos heavy with our breath, our grief, and our music. We place the cans around the tombstones 'cause flowers die and we've no time to mourn them too. It is July in Fort Worth, and the heat is drinking my invisibility in cool gulps. Mama's taught me to tell no one I'm a Roma, but to never forget I am one. Texas is a curse, flat and dry with fuel station and lost people. Texas is a curse, flat and breathless with cattle that eat purple prairie flowers out of a fear of death. I've been estranged from mountains for 1,500 years. My body mourns the loss of those green mountains in northern India that twist into the sky to make you holy. Texas is also salvation. The way God hides in the rain, we hide in our shops, we hide in the humidity, and all is well. While an aunt's home is bulldozed in Italy, we tell you that we are Greek, so you ask no questions. America. A handsome woman who is fond of things that disappear. America, my mother's favorite goat stew, heavy with curry, sweat, and wine. Soon you can't tell the difference between the carrots and the tomatoes. America, gypsy girls who read your palms, who spit Spanish out of their throats, tell you they come from Puerto Rico, and when you leave, the remnants of Spanish words slide back down into their stomachs, while Romani curls against their tongues as a reawakening, teaching them what it means to hide, to love. When it's dinner time, I'll consume whatever this country feeds me. Legend says we were always made of music, and some Indian king wanted the poor to drink our music, like their hungry mouths were just waiting for the liturgy of our lutes, big and brown and shaped like a mother's bosom, like our playing would somehow make up for their misfortune, the way breast milk is just a mother's wet plea for a child's health. Legend says we took the ox and the wheat the king gave us in return for song, gorged on the gifts, wasted our music somewhere in the hills. The king was displeased, and he told us to go. I have cousins I don't know, who are ignorant of hiding places in the basements of Texas. They live on the edges of Parisian territory, come into the city to consume your heavy pant pockets, leave you empty, eat the coins for dinner, and ruminate on how home would taste unlike this weighted gold within the hallways of their mouths. I ache at the way a crowded metro in Paris in the spring, with remnants of rain and the stench of cigarettes clinging to the air, is full of people getting on and off for home. We haven't stopped moving since.
My name is Brian Dunnewald, class of 2014 at Interlochen Arts Academy. I'll be playing the fugue from Prelude and Fugue on the Name of Alain by Maurice Duruflay. Duruflay was a perfectionist. We don't have many works from him, and he was very scrupulous with his work. But what we do have are each unique little gems in the organ and choral world. The piece you'll hear today was written in homage to his friend and fellow organist-composer Jean Alain. Alain died in World War II in a gunfight, and Maurice wrote this song in memory of him, using themes from his music, as well as Alain's name, as the opening theme of the fugue. You'll hear this theme in the first five notes, from which Durafleet develops an intricate subject.
Thank you.
This is Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students from the Interlochen Arts Academy. For those of you just tuning in, this show pays tribute to graduating seniors who coincidentally make up a large percentage of the theater department. Up next, a fairy tale from a children's theater program recorded last February.
Sleeping Beauty. A long time ago, there were a king and queen who said every day,
If only we had a child.
But they never had one. But it happened that once when the queen was bathing, a frog crept out of the water onto the land and said to her,
"Your wish shall be fulfilled. Before a year has gone by, you shall have a daughter."
What the frog had said came true, and the queen had a little girl who was so pretty that the king could not contain himself for joy and ordered a great feast. He invited not only his kindred, friends, and acquaintances, but also the wise women, in order that they might be kind and well-disposed towards the child. There were 13 of them in his kingdom, but as he only had 12 golden plates for them to eat out of, one of them had to be left at home. The feast was held with all manner of splendor, and when it came to an end, the wise women bestowed their magic gifts upon the baby. One gave virtue, another beauty, a third riches, and so on with everything in the world that one can wish for. When 11 of them had made their promises, suddenly the 13th came in. She wished to avenge herself for not having been invited, and without greeting or even looking at anyone, she cried with a loud voice,
"The king's daughter shall in her 15th year prick herself with a spindle and fall down dead."
And without saying a word more, she turned around and left the room. They were all shocked, but the 12th, whose good wish still remained unspoken, came forward, and as she could not undo the evil sentence, but only soften it, she said,
"It shall not be death, but a deep sleep of 100 years, into which the princess shall fall."
The king, who would fain keep his dear child from the misfortune, gave orders that every spindle in the whole kingdom should be burnt. Meanwhile, the gifts of the wise women were plenteously fulfilled on the young girl, for she was so beautiful, modest, good-natured, and wise that everyone who saw her was bound to love her. It happened that on the very day when she was 15 years old, the king and queen were not at home, and the maiden was left in the palace quite alone. So she went round into all sorts of places, looked into rooms and bedchambers just as she liked, and at last came to an old tower. She climbed up the narrow, winding staircase and reached a little door. A rusty key was in the lock, and when she turned it, the door sprang open, and there in a little room sat an old woman with a spindle, busily spinning her flax.
"Good day, old mother,"
said the king's daughter.
"What are you doing there?"
"I'm spinning,"
said the old woman, and nodded her head.
"What sort of thing is that rattles so merrily?"
said the girl, and she took the spindle and wanted to spin too. But scarcely had she touched the spindle when the magic decree was fulfilled and she pricked her finger with it. And in the very moment when she felt the prick, she fell down upon the bed that stood there and lay in a deep sleep. And this sleep extended over the whole palace. The king and queen, who had just come home and had entered the great hall, began to go to sleep, and the whole of the court with them. The horses, too, went to sleep. The dogs in the yard, the pigeons upon the roof, the flies on the walls. Even the fire that was flaming on the hearth became quiet and slept. The roast meat left off frizzling, and the cook, who was just going to pull the hair of the scullery boy because he had forgotten something, let him go and went to sleep. And the wind fell, and on the trees before the castle not a leaf moved again. But round about the castle there began to grow a hedge of thorns, which every year became higher, and at last grew close up round the castle and all over it, so that there was nothing of it to be seen, not even the flag upon the roof. But the story of the beautiful sleeping Briar Rose, for so the princess was named, went about the country, so that from time to time king's sons came and tried to get through the thorny hedge into the castle. But they found it impossible, for the thorns held fast together as if they had hands, and the youths were caught in them, could not get loose again, and died a miserable death. After long, long years, a king's son came again to that country and heard an old man talking about the thorny hedge, and that a castle was said to stand behind it in which a wonderfully beautiful princess named Briar Rose had been asleep for 100 years, and that the king and queen and the whole court were asleep likewise. He had heard, too, from his grandfather, that many king's sons had already come and had tried to get through the thorny hedge, but they had remained sticking fast in it and had died a pitiful death. Then the youth said,
"I am not afraid. I will go and see the beautiful Briar Rose."
The good old man might dissuade him as he would, he did not listen to his words. But by this time the 100 years had just passed, and the day had come when Briar Rose was to awake again. When the king's son came near to the thorn hedge, it was nothing but large and beautiful flowers, which parted from each other of their own accord and let him pass unhurt. Then they closed again behind him like a hedge. In the castle yard he saw the horses and the spotted hounds lying asleep. On the roof sat the pigeons with their heads under their wings. And when he entered the house, the flies were asleep upon the wall, the cook in the kitchen was still holding out his hand to seize the boy, and the maiden was sitting by the black hen which she was going to pluck. He went on farther, and in the great hall he saw the whole of the court lying asleep, and up by the throne lay the king and queen. Then he went on still farther, and all was so quiet that a breath could be heard. And at last he came to the tower, and opened the door into the little room where Briar Rose was sleeping. There she lay, so beautiful that he could not turn his eyes away, and he stooped down and gave her a kiss. But as soon as he kissed her, Briar Rose opened her eyes and awoke, and looked at him quite sweetly. Then they went down together, and the king awoke, and the queen, and the whole court, and looked at each other in great astonishment. And the horses in the courtyard stood up and shook themselves. The hounds jumped up and wagged their tails. The pigeons upon the roof pulled out their heads from under their wings, looked around, and flew into the open country. The flies on the wall crept again. The fire in the kitchen burned up and flickered and cooked the meat. The joint began to turn and sizzle again. And the cook gave the boy such a box on the ear that he screamed.
Have it crushed, fuck!
And the maid finished plucking the fowl. And the marriage of the king's son with Briar Rose was celebrated with all splendor.
Ha! Ha! Huzzah!
And they lived contented to the end of their days. The end.
You're listening to a special graduation edition of Radio Collage. One of the great things about the Interlochen Arts Academy is the opportunity for musicians to form chamber groups. Here are the first two movements of Carl Nielsen's Opus 43, performed by one such ensemble, the Equinox Wind Quintet. Oboist Benjamin Brogadier tells us more.
Unlike a lot of more modern quintets, it's a lot smoother, it's a lot more melodic lines, and just really blending all the sounds of each of the different instruments together is a pretty great challenge, which is fun to try and accomplish.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students from the Interlochen Arts Academy. This year, as a part of the Composers in Context Festival, students at the Academy studied Ned Roram, composers who influenced him, and composers he's influenced. Among the student performances, Emily's aria from Roram's Aurotown. Here's senior soprano Sage Diagra Roop.
It's what is normally known as Emily's final monologue, and she's actually dead when she's singing this. She died from childbirth when she's very young, and she's not exactly in heaven yet, but she's not on earth either. She's sort of in the in-between, and she's been watching her life, and it's just, it hurts her too much to watch. And so she begins by saying, take me back up the hill, take me back to my grave. So she's saying, it's too hard for me to watch my loved ones and my family, and I don't want to see it anymore. And then she changes her mind. She says, wait, one last look. Like, let me see all this one last time. And so then the whole piece is kind of her just remembering and appreciating the little things in her life. But of course, this pain comes back every time she remembers these things. And it's a beautiful aria.
Back to my grave. Goodbye to ticking clocks. Goodbye to shoes and socks. To coffee and food. To gratitude.
This is Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students from the Interlochen Arts Academy. We've got time for just one more work, so we'll call on the Academy Orchestra, which, of course, has several members of Interlochen's class of 2014. Here's Debussy's popular Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students from the Interlochen Arts Academy. We say goodbye to all the graduating seniors and wish them the best in all endeavors. Radio Collage is a production of Interlochen Public Radio. Production assistance came from
Sasha Bilt Ito
and Dylan McBride. This is Classical IPR.